is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom, one more day. Lots of big stuff in the news today, and we're going to try and get to several topics that I think Tom's listeners really, really care about. And I wanted to start off with one I think the listeners played a big role in helping get to the point that it's at now. Tim Carr, Senior Director of Strategy at Free Press, freepress.net. Tim, tell us what's going on this time with net neutrality.
Well, your listeners probably know that we fought this long 10-year battle to get net neutrality on the books, or I should say back on the books, at the Federal Communications Commission. And we won a significant victory on February 26th when the federal agency voted to protect the open Internet. And in the aftermath of that, the phone and cable lobby has gone ballistic trying to reverse the Federal Communications Commission's ruling. There has been a marathon series of hearings in Congress, and just earlier this week, late last week, we saw U.S. Telecom, which is a leading trade group for Internet service providers, and a local ISP in Texas called Alamo, file suit in a U.S. appeals court against the FCC to try to reverse this ruling in the courts as well.
Now, from everything I'm reading, it doesn't seem like there's much merit to this case as of yet. If I'm understanding correctly, these laws rules haven't even gone into effect yet, and they're trying to sue preemptively. How does that even work legally? How do you file a lawsuit when you're not yet harmed?
Well, they are just willing to get things started as soon as possible. I mean, there are legal means by which they can do that, but the reality exists that the net neutrality ruling was built on a very sound legal basis that Congress, a bipartisan Congress, no less, voted to support in 1996 when they passed the Telecommunications Act. And that sound legal basis is called common carriage. It just basically says that your internet service provider provides you with an internet connection, and then they have to get out of the way. You can decide what you do online. You can go to whatever website or services that you choose without your ISP trying to block your connection, throttle it, or in any way discriminate against your ability to connect and communicate. It's a very sound law that has existed throughout the history of communications and even transportation, that has withstood several court challenges over the past. We're confident that this filing by the U.S. Telecom and the Alamo ISP will likely lose in the court.
I want to quickly remind everybody we're speaking with Tim Carr, Senior Director of Strategy at Free Press, freepress.net. It's my understanding that the FCC didn't even go as far in which rules that they are introducing and bringing into play as they could have. They're not putting in place any pricing regulation or parts rules less relevant to broadband service. So what is it that Verizon and AT&T, the groups this telecom lobby represents, what is it that they're so afraid of?
Well, what the FCC did was invoke Title II of the Communications Act, but they also did this what's a somewhat legal process, is that they forbear from parts of that ruling. So it is very narrowly focused at preventing discriminatory practices by ISPs, preventing them from blocking your connection. And now, why would they protest that? Why would they hire their lawyers and file suit against the FCC? Because ISPs want to take more control over our internet freedoms. They no longer like the idea that we get to choose what types of videos we're watching and what type of service provides us with those videos, or what types of music and what sort of music services we get to choose every time that we go online. They want to control those decisions and favor their own services, to favor companies that pay them an extra fee, and basically take away the power over our internet experience from we internet users.
Now, you mentioned the courts. I think most of us are aware that our court system in general is pretty pro-business these days. But wasn't it the Supreme Court themselves who kind of gave a nod to this exact regulation, common carrier status, in the first go-round of net neutrality cases before the court?
Well, there was a Supreme Court case in 2005 that we refer to as Brand X, in which the Supreme Court majority determined that the Federal Communications Commission had the authority under law to classify Internet access however it likes, as long as it follows the Communications Act. So there is that legal precedent, and that is exactly what happened a couple of weeks ago on February 26 when the SEC decided to classify Internet access under Title II, the common carrier classification that I had referred to earlier. So there is legal precedence that favors the FCC, even if you look at a recent court decision in January of 2014. It was a U.S. appeals court that said that the FCC, if it wants to protect against discriminatory practices by ISPs, could use Title II of the Communications Act. And that's what they have done.
Now, 4 million people, I believe, commented on the FCC's net neutrality rules, contacted via some through your site, Free Press, contacted the FCC and said that they absolutely wanted the open Internet protected. Do you think that we'll see that same kind of public outcry, that involvement, if these rules are challenged?
I would think so. People are very passionate about this issue. They're very passionate about their ability to control their own media experience. That's what has made the Internet so revolutionary. It is a two-way communications medium, and the rule that the FCC put in place protects that our ability to both share information out, to bring information in, and to control that experience. So yes, we broke the internet. We broke the internet at the FCC in favor of this ruling. 4 million people contacted that agency. They couldn't handle the input. It was unprecedented in the history of that agency. And if Congress or the courts decide to take these freedoms away from us, we'll be mobilizing a lot of those people as well to make sure that we restore the law, that we protect Internet users, and we make sure that this two-way communications medium puts Internet users first, and certainly ahead of the ISPs like Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T.
So there's no reason at this point to be too worried that our net neutrality ruling that just came out, guidelines from the FCC just published that you were actually, I think, here talking to Tom about and celebrating. There's no reason to fear that they're going to be taken away just yet, and anybody who threatens that might be in for a vast, humongous response.
Well, we shouldn't underestimate the power of the phone and cable lobby. These companies spend tens of millions of dollars on campaign contributions, on lobbyists, on think tanks, on PR firms to try to influence Washington. And we've seen in the past that Washington oftentimes goes against the interests of the public because there is such a well-entrenched corporate lobby there. So we should remain vigilant, but we should at least know that the net neutrality ruling was created on a sound legal basis. And so we have the wind in our sails to some extent, but we should remain vigilant and make sure that the phone and cable lobby doesn't manage to defeat this important.
Well, Tim, you and everybody at Free Press helped that sleeping giant of public get power the first time, and I have absolute faith that you guys can do it again if needed. Thank you so much for explaining this to us.
Thank you.
Tim Carr, Free Press, freepress.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Why do you think the big telecoms are so afraid of net neutrality? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, sitting in for Tom today. And I do want to mention again, if you're in L.A. this weekend, March 28th or 29th, join Tom at Sister Giant 3 with Marianne Williamson, Dennis Kucinich, and Senator Bernie Sanders Check it out at sistergiant.com or, of course, tomhartman.com for all the information. Big thanks to Tim Carr for breaking down that lawsuit. We joked about it yesterday that it did seem like the telecoms had that
ready to go,
filled out for as soon as those rules were passed.
I printed out the actual complaint itself. I have it here. You can see it if you're watching on television. And you've seen some lawsuits before, Danielle, and a lot of people out there listening have as well. And they're often, especially on such a big issue, very thick, lots and lots of pages and pleadings and legal mumbo-jumbo. This is two pages. And that's why, because we were reading the articles about it, like, well, it sounds awfully vague.
Yes.
And we just thought, well, perhaps they, you know, just did, you know, a real quickie article. No. I would imagine some of the articles are longer than the complaint itself.
Yeah.
We think it's arbitrary.
Yeah.
In other words, we don't like it. Will you do something, court?
Their lawsuit actually includes statements that their challenge may be premature.
Yes.
And is issued out of an abundance of caution. I'm not a legal expert, a legal scholar by any means, but I thought you actually had to have a reason to sue somebody else. How ridiculous that reason may be, we have seen frivolous lawsuits, but
sure.
I thought you actually had to have a reason. You couldn't just, I think this might be a bad idea.
Right. Well, yeah, usually they'll probably toss it. And note, it's, you know, it's in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. This was the same court, and they note in this, that has thrown out prior attempts to regulate the Internet, to keep the Internet open. But what, in the most recent ruling that spawned this entire FCC ruling and this big process that where everyone, 4 million people came out and said, yes, we want an open Internet, and yes, we want them designated as a Title II, under Title II of the Telecommunications Act. What they said in that last time when they tossed out net neutrality provisions proposed by the FCC is, hey, if you want to do this, this was the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals saying, if you want to do this, FCC, what you need to do is make them Title II, and then you can do what you want to do.
Right.
So they've essentially already said, yeah, what you're doing right now, this is on there based on this court's suggestion, practically.
Oh, that was the D.C. Circuit.
Sure. D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Oh, see, I was mistaken, and when I was talking to Tim, I think I referenced it as the Supreme Court. D.C. Circuit.
D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
See, that's why Shano follows this stuff, to correct my mistakes, among other reasons.
But but what I'm saying, though, is that while the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals most recently did throw out net neutrality rules proposed by the FCC, the reason they did it was because, and they said explicitly, because they aren't regulated under Title II. If you want to do this, regulate them under Title II.
Yeah.
That's what the FCC did, and now they're still suing about it.
I
expect them to. The reason they're doing it, and you ask the question, well, why in the world would they sue over this? Well, of course, they're going to lose money. This, you know, being able to have control over this means it, because it has value. You know, how fast the Internet is, they can put a price tag. They can put a premium on it. They can charge more. As cable television, you know, goes more and more towards the Internet, this is a great money-making opportunity.
Yeah. It's just interesting to consider, to think about, because here in the States, you know, a simple law that says a company, a corporation, can't decide to speed information up or slow it down based on what they want you to look at, is being challenged and as being seen as, I believe the legal term they used, arbitrary and capricious. Is that the correct pronunciation?
It is.
Yet in other countries, they have so many stronger regulations, including this right to be forgotten.
This is an interesting thing.
It really is.
So what is it, Daniel?
It is a European EU regulation called the right to be forgotten. And the EU approved this right for citizens to remove negative links about themselves from Google, to request that Google remove information.
And negative is a subjective term.
Right.
If I don't like what's on the Internet about me, I can say, take it down.
Right. It takes a few weeks. It's a simple request to Google to remove information, and they are now legally required to comply. They also have much stronger privacy protections than we do, much faster, lower-priced Internet service. Yet here in the States, you know, net neutrality being challenged.
Right.
It's just an interesting juxtaposition, because this whole technology discussion, you know, that has gone on now for the past few years, we saw the SOPA and PIPA. It is abundantly clear that citizens of the United States want free, open Internet.
Right. And also want a certain degree of control over their personal information.
Right.
And that has gone out the window, largely.
It has.
And there's a very concerning trend I've noticed, that the younger a person is, the more they just kind of take it for granted that their personal information is going to be everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The expectation of privacy has plummeted in this nation. And you know, Tom often says that the only two things that can stand up, the only thing that can stand up to organized money is organized people, unions, and the government. And that's why our government is here. The government, the corporations are doing this. They're, you know, you've got an amazing story I think you're going to get to
mm-hmm.
about, you know, corporations. If you're worried about the NSA, think about what corporations are doing. And the only power to stand against that would be the government.
Right. You know,
and the FCC has done this now. They're standing up to corporations to say, we want to make as much money as possible by making the internet essentially our private property that we're gonna dole out in little bits depending on how rich you are.
Mm-hmm.
And now when it comes to privacy, I think they need to step in as well.
When it comes to privacy, we often focus on the NSA, but according to, let me get the author's name here, Bruce Schneier, I believe it's pronounced, and his new book, Data and Goliath, looks like an incredible new book that was just came out. To quote him here, Google knows what kind of porn each of us searches for, which old lovers we still think about, our shames, our concerns, and our secrets. If Google decided to, it could figure out which of us is worried about our mental health, thinking about tax evasion, or planning to protest a particular government policy. I used to say that Google knows more about what I'm thinking than my wife does, but that doesn't go far enough. Google knows more about what I'm thinking than I do, because Google remembers all of it perfectly and forever. So when we're talking about net neutrality, when we're talking about these, you know, really important regulations, is it time to put stronger privacy protections in these regulations as well?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Should U.S. citizens have the right to be forgotten online as well? Why do you think? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I am Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom today, talking about, I think, essentially corporate power.
Sure.
When we consider this topic that we're on now, the FCC and the right to privacy and net neutrality, along with our two other great guests that we're going to speak to today mm-hmm. about agriculture, ag-gag bills, these factory farms that don't want us to know about what's going on, and Lori Wallach of Public Citizen talking about the TPP. It all relates to corporate power. How do we stand up to corporations, and that's what agencies like the FCC are for.
Exactly.
You know,
and the FTC and the USDA and et cetera.
Right. The EU didn't pass a right to be forgotten law, you know, out of thin air. They
sure.
had help.
And you'll notice that a lot of these groups are the ones that, and you look at the conservative budget, they want to defund or get rid of completely.
Right. Exactly. I see a
direct line between the two.
Right. And there really is this amazing new article Shane found this morning. The NSA doesn't need help to spy on your calls to learn your secrets. They don't need to spy on us to learn our secrets. And it's an excerpt from the book by Bruce Schneier, Data and Goliath. And it's really stunning how he writes.
He puts it in very stark terms.
Right.
I think is what it is. There's nothing in there that we haven't touched on or talked about, but the way he puts it really drives it home. And I want to know if people are concerned about this.
Right. He says, if you have a Gmail account, you can check for yourself. You can look at your search history for any time you were logged in. It goes back for as long as you've had the account, probably for years. Do it. You'll be surprised. It's more intimate than if you'd sent Google your diary. And while Google lets you see it, you have no right to delete anything you don't want there.
That's the part that gets to me is that, you know, it's different when you're a public figure.
Right.
You know, there's different protections because if you put yourself out in the public, you become a public figure. And you're a public servant, especially some of those privacy, you know, levels go down. But as a private citizen, We know that our identity actually is worth something.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Radio Shack case here. I think it's
worth being considered an asset. Radio Shack declaring bankruptcy, filing forms for bankruptcy, is including in its list of assets the customer list, 65 million customer names and physical addresses, as well as 13 million addresses. I think this may be the first time we've heard about a company listing information as a monetary physical asset.
Well, Borders did it in their bankruptcy. They
actually, oh, really?
Yes, they auctioned off their customer information. I mean, I know people my age especially, and perhaps a little bit older, if you've ever gone to a Radio Shack, especially back in the 80s and 90s, you went to buy batteries. Literally, two AA batteries. It was convenient. You needed some batteries. You went in, and sure enough, you got to the cashier. You weren't using a credit card or a check or anything. You want to give them a couple bucks for the batteries, and it was, can we have your address, please? Can we have your phone number, please?
Right.
And then later on, can we have your email address, please? Well, I got to the point where she said no.
Well, now they have those, savers cards. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, no. And you. Well, it was one of those things where if you did say no, as Jim said, you know, they would still sell it to you.
Right.
But the thing is, now they have that list, and it's worth something, is what I want to point out. If they're going to auction it off, and actually their competitors are the ones who are trying to get in the way of the auction, because
they're
really
saying that it's actually, that AT&T has the right to this information because a lot of this information was acquired signing people up for phone contracts.
Sure.
Via Radio Shack.
Right. So, but obviously, this information is worth something, and we all know this. There's different email lists that are being sold in the political circles. Mm-hmm. You know, Ted Cruz, when he announced, he said, text Constitution to this number. And sure enough, everyone who did that, they now have your contact information.
That verified valuable. You have a valid cell phone number.
But it is very valuable for getting information out, for getting sales leads if you're in a corporation. So if your private information is an asset, then it's a property. You should have property rights over this.
Right.
Everyone thinks of property rights as you hold something in your hand and it's mine. You know, all right, I have a piece of land and that's my house and that's mine. But along with owning a piece of property, and if you consider your identification and your information property, there are certain property rights that go along with it. And it's called a bundle of sticks in law school. But one of your property rights is to have, you know, control over it. You're able to sell it. You're able to mortgage it if you want. You're also able to exclude other people from using it. For example, my car, I can tell everyone else, don't use my car because it's my property. That's one of my rights.
Yeah.
So if we extend that to an asset, our personal information, we should be able to say, no, you can't have it, or no, you can't use it.
Right.
But there's nothing in the law right now, and we give it up so willy-nilly.
Right, and even those who support the idea say, how? How is it possible? Tell Google to delete your information. Do you really believe that it's gone, that it is off of the internet, that it's not cached somewhere on somebody's, computer?
Sure. But, and on top of it, a lot of these services are free.
Right.
A Gmail account is free. If it's free, you're the product,
right,
is the old saying.
Exactly.
Because as soon as you put your information in it, Google has it, and that's what they're using. They're compiling a huge database of information that can then be sold.
Mm-hmm. So anyhow, lots of people want to weigh in on this. I would love to hear your thoughts about that, about, other topics we've touched on this week. Feel free to check in and let us know what you think. Let's check in with Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Norma, thanks for hanging out with us today on the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi.
One thing that a lot of people don't understand is that information is power. And if they can control the internet and they can control your access to information, then you can remain ignorant. This creates an ignorant population. It's like if you try to go to a bookstore today, most of the bookstores carry more what I call toys rather than what you would call reference materials. If you wanted to go buy a common law book, good luck.
Yeah, you'd probably have to go to a college campus or somewhere, some type of specialty store.
And a lot of times if you pull something up on the internet, if you're looking for something, a reference, it'll say edited by Anonymous. Who is Anonymous and why did they edit something that has been part of history for 50 or 70 years today? Why edit it today? And so I feel like trying to control information is the point. But like Shana was saying, there are things called history files. Wherever you go shop, your name goes into a file and it will stay there for 10 years on a particular 10-year history file. A lot of companies now make 20-year history files. Here in Alabama, an advertising company bought the entire DMV list. And sold it to dealerships. And that dealership matched it against people who had ever bought anything from them. And so I received a flyer in the mail with my name and a car I used to own saying, come trade this thing in and we'll give you a great deal. And I'm looking at this with my name, my address, and I'm wondering what else was on the DMV file they sold and how many people did they sell my name and my information to? Like you said, this is a way for them to collect stuff. So anytime I shop, I usually pay cash and they ask for my phone number. I say, I don't own one because it's none of their business.
Right.
I tell people this all the time. They say, well, do you have a company card? I said, no. Well, we can give you one and you can get a discount right now. I said, no, because I'm not going to let you have my name.
Right. That's
no right to know who I am.
That is such an important source of information for companies these days. That's why they want you to have that club card or you know, discount card or whatever. It's not to benefit you. You know, it's to track what you've purchased and to market to you specifically so that they can make more money or to sell your information, as you said.
They sell your information. You're correct. That is a big deal. Information is power, and information and power equal money. So they sell your name to any company anywhere in the world. And once it goes into that computer, you can never get it out.
What? Right. That's the question. And Norma, all excellent points.
I do want to tell a different story because this just happened today.
Okay.
Did it not? We signed up at Wegmans. We have a Wegmans Shopper Club card. And in this way, they actually send us coupons for things that we use or don't use, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But Amy's had a recall on some spinach. They were worried about no one's been ill as a result of it. We buy Amy's products. Got a phone call. Left a message saying, we show that on your Shopper's Club card that you purchased X item. You may want to, if it's in your freezer, toss it out. It's been recalled. Actually, they said, bring it back in for a refund. There are some benefits to it. You get a discount for it. So they do, in those situations, you know, I've always been kind of hinky about those Shopper's Club cards, you know, from whatever store. Whatever grocery store is out there, they have them. They track your spending.
Right.
But there are some benefits to it, too. So there are two sides of it. You know, is it worth giving up some of your privacy to a store, or Giant or Kroger or whatever it is for that benefit? You know, what do you think?
It begs the question, just what Norma said. You know, you might have Google right to be forgotten, but is that your grocery store's right to be forgotten? Is that their computer? Is that their search engines? How do we control our privacy in this day and age without essentially, you know, only using cash, never using a credit card, never using a computer?
Staying off the grid,
staying completely off the grid. Is it possible in this day and age? Is it even possible?
Old parable, maybe somebody can remind me the actual story. It's actually about rumors, but if you take a pillow, a feather pillow, on a windy day and go to the top of a mountain and let it go, you know, trying to get your information back is like trying to go track down every one of those feathers that blew away.
Right.
It's impossible.
Then why have a right to be forgotten? And should we be deleting information that's out there? Like, hey, if there was a predator in your neighborhood, would you want them to be able to delete that file off of Google?
Right.
There's a lot of important questions here. I would love to hear your thoughts on it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
What do you think? How do we protect our privacy in this day and age, or is it even possible? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program here on Free Speech TV. Let's check in with Dave in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. Dave, thanks for hanging out with us and watching the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Daniel. I didn't get on yesterday. I wanted to bring this up, UN has said that the access to clean water should be a basic human right, which I wholeheartedly agree with. And while millions of people around the world do not have access to clean water, in our country we passed the Clean Water Act back in the 70s, followed by the Safe Drinking Water Act. And however, these are routinely bypassed by various industries, oil and gas and big agribusiness, just to name a few.
Oh, yeah. They have absolute exemptions thanks to the Bush administration. Fracking companies, oil companies are exempt from the Clean Water Act.
Right. Well, that's the Halliburton loophole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, they do this knowing that all they're going to have to do, even if they're not exempt from the Clean Water Act, is just pay the fines, which is to them it's just part of doing business.
Yeah.
And then there's also the bottled water industry, which is basically controlled by four major corporations around the world. And all this is, you know, water being pumped out of an aquifer and put into a fancy bottle, and then it's sold at an exorbitant price. And then you're left with the plastic to get rid of. So,
yeah.
You know, water is just essential. And if we don't have it, the human race will not survive.
Yep.
And I think this is going to be the big issue coinciding with climate change, which they both go together. I think this is going to be the major issue of our time.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's going to be more important than oil, more important than food even, in our lifetime. You know,
and this links back in with Title II. Water suppliers actually are common carriers, but they're trying now in this country, and they've done it overseas, I think, and they're trying it also, Tom brought it up in Ireland, of privatizing water.
Right. Look at Detroit.
Detroit. You know, that's when this whole UN thing came up, where only if you have money can you have water in this country. And that just makes no sense.
Right. A judge in Michigan said there is no right to water. Now, I agree with Dave that it's stated clearly in the UN, you know, international human rights. It is pretty clear, and I think we would all agree. I mean, who would say that you don't have a right as an American citizen, as a member of the richest country on earth, let alone, you know, millions upon millions of people throughout the world, but in Detroit, as an American citizen, to clean drinking water?
Right.
Really? American exceptionalism at work for you. Dave, thank you. Excellent points, and I agree. It certainly was an important one to add to the list. Thank you for watching there in Armstrong Creek, Wisconsin. We have 1 minute. I'll skip it. I'm not going to put somebody in, only get 30 seconds in. I do want to mention that, you know, if you want to comment on a subject from earlier in the week,
we've touched on a few,
or from something in the news, you are certainly welcome to give us a call. 202-536-2370 is the number. And, you know, Tom's away, so we'll stick with the anything goes format. It's fun that way, and you guys have such amazing contributions. So give us a call. We'll be here. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom today. Just a reminder, if you're in L.A. this weekend, check out Tom at Sister Giant 3. SisterGiant.com is the website. And I did see a request on Facebook that we mention our Twitter accounts one more time. Shane is Producer Shano, and I am Danielle on radio. So give us a shout over there. Say hello. We appreciate it, and we do check it pretty much every day. Lots of important topics going on right now. Net neutrality, privacy, and how we maintain privacy in the technological age that we live in.
Is it possible
such a
to get
big
it back?
Question.
Is
yeah.
it possible to get it back even?
That's, right.
I don't know.
And you think about the information that's out there. We often think about our name, our, you know, the information that we may post on Facebook or Twitter, you know, pictures, personal commentary, our friends list. But there's so much more personal information out there about us that we have no control over.
No.
Another quote from this amazing article, NSA doesn't need to spy on your calls to learn your secrets. He writes, web search data is another source of intimate information that can be used for surveillance. You can argue whether this is data or metadata. The NSA claims it's metadata because your search terms are embedded in the URLs. But we don't lie to our search engine. We are more intimate with it than we are with our friends, lovers, or family members. We always tell it exactly what we're thinking about in as clear words as possible.
That's so true.
Yeah, it's really stunning if you think about what information Google knows about us.
Sure. And by association, if an entity were to get a hold of that information.
Yeah.
Google made a lot of trips to the White House. There's an article about it. On average, one a day
right.
over the last couple of years.
You know, and
I'm not saying that they're going over there to give out all of our information. I know there was lots of negotiation about antitrust because they were going to be – they were – the FTC or the FCC was going after them.
Well, they were challenged in the EU on antitrust.
Well, because another way that they use their information is if they know what your tendencies are, when you put in a search into their engine, they can categorize things in a certain way to push certain websites or products
right.
at you.
So much information, so much corporate power.
Yeah.
You know, these companies have a control on our lives that is almost unimaginable and incomprehensible.
Right.
And it, you know, we need to have these conversations.
What can we do about it?
Yeah.
That's probably the general question. What can we do about it?
Let's check in with Danette listening on Sirius in Hinesville, Georgia. Danette, what do you think we can do about privacy?
Nothing. Nothing. We have no privacy. We got to stop living in a fantasy land that we have some modicum of privacy because there ain't none. This is the United States of America, Edward Snowden, Chelsea Manning, like Martin Luther King. You know, if we just pay attention to history and just know that you don't have privacy, you know, I mean, they've got eminent domain where you've got ranchers in Nebraska that are trying to save land that they've had for generations, and their government decided, oh, we're just going to give white it a foreign power.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no privacy. There's no protection. And that's just the reality of it. And I'm kind of choosy about what I give to people. I do have grocery store, you know, I use like my grocery store's Food Lion. And so I do have a grocery store card and they track what I buy and
right.
will print coupons to let me know what's on sale, which sometimes I find helpful. A lot of times I forget that I even have the coupons. So I just pay it forward and leave them in my little shopping cart.
Yeah.
So that other people can use them.
We often do the same thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's mandated that you have to have a social security number if you want your kid to go to public school. You know, if you sign up for the Army, they have all your information. If you work for the federal government, you know, they
but
have your information.
Danette, do you think that this is a relatively new, at least widespread, a relatively new thought that we have no privacy, that this is a generational thing? And if you go back just a couple generations, not even a couple decades, maybe in age, then most people assumed they had privacy until quite recently.
White people thought they had privacy, not black people.
Hmm.
White people had, I think Edward Snowden really kind of blew the lid on that when they realized like the depth that the post 9/11 security machine in our country, how behemoth it was. I think that really shattered the fantasy that a lot of white people had. But in black lives, when you're spying on Medgar Evers, you're spying on, you know, the Nation of Islam or the Black Panthers or the civil, you know, the various civil rights organizations that are just trying to be considered citizens are being spied on, or other minority groups are being spied on. I've always, even being in the military, there are certain things that you cannot talk about over the phone. My husband was military, and he would sometimes say, you know, start to tell me whatever's going on. I'm like, yeah, really, don't say that.
Yeah.
You know, the phone lines may not be, you know, secure. And I used to be in the Nation of Islam, and we knew our phones were tapped. So,
sure.
I mean, we just didn't. So for white people, yeah.
You know,
phenomenon.
It may be a statement of being naive. It's an excellent point that I hadn't considered. And you're absolutely correct on the racial aspect.
And to this, the over-inclusion, we'll put it nicely, of African-Americans in our criminal justice system,
mm-hmm.
privacy is definitely out the window as soon as you enter that system. I mean, think about it. All trials are all in public. They have to be under the
mm-hmm.
Constitution. Now DNA swabs. When
public records.
Public records, DNA swabs. You know, you from there on, when you apply for a job, putting, you know, having to put a conviction on
job application
on job
or renter's application.
So as soon as you enter the criminal justice system, your privacy level goes way down.
Yeah.
And if you think of the over-inclusion, like I said, of African-Americans and that, sure, there's two different levels of privacy in this nation. It has gone back way past a few decades.
There certainly is. You know, Danette, you brought up a whole realm of points there that I will have to give some serious thought to. Excellent point. Further proof why Tom's listeners and viewers are the smartest people on earth. Thank you, Danette, for hanging out with us there in Hinesville, Georgia. We are going to get to Josh Falk, Senior Director of Food Policy at the Humane Society, about industry and agriculture and the privacy that they want that we shouldn't give them.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, sitting in for Tom today, talking about privacy, about corporate power, and lots of important topics, including the next one we're going to discuss. Josh Balk, Senior Director of Food Policy at the Humane Society of the United States, is with us, humanesociety.org. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great to be on. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking about corporate power and ways we stand up to it. I think one of the obvious ones being whistleblowing, reporting actions that we see as immoral or possibly illegal. Why are ag bills, ag gag bills, a threat to that? And for people who might not be familiar with them, how do we explain them briefly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Kentucky is a great example. To answer your question, here's what happened. Last year, the Humane Society of the United States did an investigation into Iron Maiden pig farm. And yes, you heard me correctly. The name of the actual farm is Iron Maiden, like the torture device. And we found horrendous cruelty to the animals. We documented mother pigs in small cages they couldn't turn around. We even found workers feeding dead piglets back to their mothers, which is, of course, horrendous, but it's also illegal. So what did the pork industry do to respond? Well, did they remove these cages, create better conditions for the animals? No. They implemented what you asked about, what are these ag gag bills. And what ag gag is that it would make it a crime to be a whistleblower within an animal factory farm. So rather than the crime being abusing the animals themselves, the crime is actually reporting it and documenting it to prosecute the abuse that's occurred. Now, what's happened in Kentucky is that the meat industry put this ag gag bill and what's called a right to farm bill, which is a way to prevent new laws from being put in place to protect farm animals. They put them as amendments to good for animal bills, like bills to stop the gassing of dogs and cats and bills to strengthen the cruelty code. That way, if legislators wanted to pass good bills for animals, they would have to also include the bad bills too. So rather than passing the good bills with the bad bills, all the bills were killed. And this is just the type of nefarious actions that these big pig factory farms are doing to try to hide what's actually going on within their operations.
Well, perhaps they're learning from the way federal legislation works, because that often seems to be the case for me. You know, when we look at the amendments attached to big bills that we don't care for, these laws, in addition to, you know, prosecuting whistleblowers and making it difficult for people to report a crime or a violation, they go far beyond that, if I'm understanding, and also make it very hard for us to find out about how our food is produced. Is that correct?
You're absolutely correct. And it goes so far that some of these ag gag bills would prevent the news media from even showing footage of the investigations and exposés from within these operations. So as an example, if I'm an employee and I see horrendous animal cruelty at, let's say, a pork operation or a chicken operation, and I document it and I, you know, videotape what's going on and bring it out to the public, to authorities, if I would give it to the media and then the media would play it, according to these ag gag bills that have been introduced, people in the media would then be put in jail. So, in fact, some of these ag gag bills have such tough penalties that to those who expose the cruelty, it's even tougher than those who are actually doing the cruelty themselves. And all of this is work by the meat, egg, and dairy industries, because they know that consumers, if they knew what was going on within their facilities, would be appalled by the way animals are treated. I mean, most egg-laying hens are in small cages. They can't spread their wings. Most mother pigs are in small cages. They can't turn around. Most chickens raised for meat are in giant warehouses where they're covered in feces, and they can barely move an inch by the end of their life. And so these are really bad conditions. They know consumers are against it, and they don't want consumers to know what's actually happening.
Yeah, I can't help but think that if, you know, everything was just fine at these farms and these factory locations, that they wouldn't be afraid of people finding out about it. I want to quickly remind everybody, we're speaking with Josh Balk, Senior Director of Food Policy at the Humane Society of the United States, humanesociety.org. At Josh Balk on Twitter, at Humane Society. You know, I was reading about this recent law passed in Wyoming, one of these ag gag bills, and it says that in addition to criminalizing collecting data or footage or any information from one of these farms, it also requires government agencies to actually delete and remove any data turned over by a possible whistleblower. Do these laws potentially make it difficult, if not impossible, to, you know, regulate, to investigate these factory farms?
They certainly do. And, you know, what's scary for every consumer is that we all eat. We all eat, you know, hopefully three times a day. And what we put in our body is precious. It sustains us, hopefully keeps us healthy. And the last thing we would want as a consumer is to not know where food is coming from. And when we do want to find out where it's coming from, we can't even discover the truth. And if we do try to discover the truth, these laws are in place that prevent us from even understanding what's actually going on. You know, what you said earlier, I thought really resonated with me. It said, you know, if things were going so well, you would think it would be open to showing everybody what's happening.
Right.
You know, if I was treating my animals well, my doors would be wide open. I'd be getting tours. I'd be encouraging everyone, all my customers, everybody who's interested, please come in, see how well my animals are treated. If the exact opposite is happening, they're passing laws so no one sees what's happening. So when we eat our food and there's eggs and there's dairy and there's meat in it, if we ever actually wanted to find out how that actually got to our plate, we couldn't even do it. Now, that is the sad state of affairs for the meat, egg, and dairy industries in this country. And this is something that should appall all of us, who not only care about preventing animal cruelty, but all of us who just want to know where our food comes from.
Right, and there's no justifiable reason that I can find here. I'm sure the industries and the lobbyists have probably thrown a few semi-believable talking points out there, but it's not like blocking information about it is going to somehow make our food cheaper or give us access to better quality or make our food more nutritious. This is solely about making it difficult, if not impossible, to find out what's going on at the place our food comes from.
That's it right there. You nailed it. And you know, in fact, all those things you said that would be positives, you know, making our food safer, making our food more sustainable, coming from places that treat your animals better, this is doing the exact opposite of those things. You know what we would like to have is an arms race for factory farms to treat their animals better. We want these farms to compete against each other because they want to outdo each other for treating their animals in a dramatically more humane way than was previously done. But the opposite is happening. There's a race to the bottom. And during that race to the bottom, when they understand that they're out of consumer expectations and how they treat their animals, they know they can't be transparent. And now the question is to them, how can we move away from transparency and allow us to operate in a way that, you know, would frankly hide the facts that would be harmful for our business? And that's what they're doing with these ag gag bills. And, you know, this is an example. I mean, there was an investigation in one of the largest egg facilities in the country in Pennsylvania, and the whistleblower found salmonella all throughout the operation. And if you look, salmonella, I mean, is dangerous. It actually kills people.
Yes.
And the only reason why it was found is because a whistleblower found it. And you know what happened after that investigation came out? The legislator who represents that area introduced an ag-gag bill in Pennsylvania to make sure no more whistleblowers could come out.
Wow.
That's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah. How do people listening get involved in their communities, make sure that if there isn't one of these laws in place, that they help prevent it from becoming law in their area? Or if there is a law, such as in Wyoming, what's the best plan of attack, if you will, to repeal it and to make sure that we have the right to know where our food comes from and how it's being produced?
So you mentioned our website before, humanesociety.org, and that has a list of the states that we are battling these ag-gag laws. So right now, North Carolina, and if you have any listeners in North Carolina right now, there's an ag-gag law that's been introduced, and that's because there have been multiple investigations in the poultry industry in North Carolina that's revealed horrendous cruelty. So if you're in North Carolina, please go to our website and send us an email, and you can get involved in our efforts. And any other type of state that is working on these laws that are bad for animals, just go to our website. Sign up, and we'll get you in contact with our state director immediately.
That is awesome. Thank you so much, Josh, for exposing this and making sure that we have the right to know this information.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for covering this very important subject, too.
Absolutely. Josh Balk, one second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Josh Balk, Senior Director of Food Policy at the Humane Society of the United States, humanesociety.org. Let's find out more about our food. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano. Thank you for hanging out with us as we fill in for Tom. If you were on hold, by the way, our phone system crashed during that last interview. So please give us a call back at 202-536-3270.
It works so well for a call-in talk radio show when the phones go like that.
Yeah, it might have something to do with our internet and might be somewhat related to net neutrality. Just saying.
Throwing that
out there.
Someone asked.
Some say. Yeah, I heard somewhere.
Or just make a ridiculous statement. Put a question mark at the end.
That's right.
Throw it in the Chiron.
Right. Bad internet responsible for shutting the phone system down? Change the tone at the end. Make it a question.
There you go.
So anyhow, there is a great question on the board that plays right into what you were just talking about in the turnaround, Shane. Let's check in with Sylvia watching on Dish Network in Mountain View, Montana, is it? Or is it Missouri?
It's Missouri.
Missouri. Go ahead, yeah. Sylvia.
My question is, can we not challenge these laws as being unconstitutional? I mean, they're interfering with our First Amendment rights, are they not?
It seems that way to me. What do you think, Shane?
Especially when it comes when I just couldn't believe that there's actually parts to these laws that say if a whistleblower hands over material to a media company and the media company broadcasts that, the media company can go to jail. That seems to be a blatant violation of the First Amendment.
Yep.
When it comes to people working at the factories, you know, not all free private speech is free, actually. There's all kinds of restrictions on it. And one of the ways that, you know how we have state secrets? So if you classify something and a whistleblower says, you know, reveals it, they can end up in jail. The way you do this in a corporation is you say it's a trade secret. So how we do something is so specialized that we've come up with and we own, and if our competitors knew about it, it would be unfair competition. It's intellectual property,
right,
essentially. So it's our trade secret on how we house chickens or whatever, I guess is what they're claiming. If it is revealed, that would not be free speech.
Yeah.
So I guess that's probably the way they're trying to do it. I think it's nonsense.
Yep. And excellent question. By the way, if you want more specific information about that, there's a great article I was reading about this. Ag-gag laws are lawsuit fodder. And it's by Sam Wright over at AboveTheLaw.com. It was just posted this week. And I love how he wraps this up. Shane, I think you'll appreciate this.
Yeah.
Of course, we can brainstorm all the ways that this law is likely unconstitutional, but that fun exercise won't stop zealous local law enforcement from banging the heads of would-be whistleblowers.
Right.
So excellent question, Sylvia. And
because they're essentially just trying to scare people.
Right. But
and also the process of going through all this is very expensive.
Right.
And whistleblowers, there is a general ongoing war on whistleblowers. When he mentioned that North Carolina is the next state for ag-gag, you know, the alarm bells went off in my head. Well, North Carolina is the state that has a gag order in terms of fracking. if anybody reveals what's going on in a fracking company in North Carolina, you can be thrown in jail.
Right. While California is saying that fracking companies can't even keep the toxic chemicals that they're pumping into the ground secret, they can't claim industry secrets or whatever the
term
is.
They can't claim their trade secrets.
Thank you.
And you think, go back to BP.
Right.
BP spills a whole ton of oil in the Gulf. And what do they do? What's one of the first things they do? Make sure the press can't get out there.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely.
And I want to ask libertarians out there, my libertarian friends, everybody, their theory is that we have all this information. We don't need government agencies as our babysitters to tell us what's in our food or if a drug is good for us. The markets can dictate this, and if you don't like it, you can sue them, right? But this assumes perfect information, or at least close to it. Certainly the sharing information. Our libertarian friends in favor of these types of gag rules that benefit business and hurt consumers, because how can you make those decisions if you don't have a government agency overseeing it, and there is no public review, you know, that libertarians seem to rely on? Are libertarian friends against these egg gag bills?
Right.
I would
and
hope so.
Based on this law in Wyoming, you can't even use information you collect in a legal proceeding.
So there's an exclusionary rule on top of it all.
Yes. No. This is the language from the legislation.
Incredible.
No resource data, as it's called in the legislation, no resource data collected in violation of this section is admissible in evidence in any civil, criminal, or administrative proceeding other than a prosecution for violation of this section or a civil action against the violator.
Wow.
So if
these
you
are
find,
amazing bills. This is Alec, by the way.
Alec.
This
of
is
course.
Alec.
Of course.
These are where these bills come
and
from.
If you find information that, you know, the food company near you is doing horrible things, you're going to be prosecuted, and that's the only way the information can be used.
Wow.
Yeah. Gotta give it to Alec. That's some gall. Let's check in with James watching on Dish Network in Lockport, Illinois. James, thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program and for calling
how you doing,
back.
Danielle.
Thank you.
Yeah. But my big topic would be education. And, you know, it's always been something that bothered me as far as the cost of a college education. Now, it's just out of hand. And I called Bernie Sanders' office today, and I wanted to see if that actually coincided with the income inequality chart, and it actually does. Back in 68, when my brother went to college, most families were a single sole provider in a household, stay-at-home moms, and that individual could put not just one kid through college, but a family of four through college.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, you have two people working, and they can't get a child through college.
Easily.
And to me, it's something that Kennedy said, the best and the brightest. And we lose so much in our country, and the vast potential we have in our inner cities, not allowing these kids to go through college, man. It's a crime in its own, man. It really is.
It absolutely is, James. I am
a
with
lot of
people
you say, well, college has gone up so much, but really, and if you listen to Tom talk about this, college actually hasn't gone up. It's just the percentage of the college cost used to be paid by the government, and it's been shifted to the student. It used to be like 70-30. The government picked up 70% of the tab. The student picked up 30. Now it's been reversed. And that's, so, you know, everyone said, well, colleges are just charging more because they can and because the government subsidizes. No, it's because the government stopped paying for so much of the tuition cost.
Yeah.
Yes, it leads to income disparity like crazy.
Right. And this is how generational wealth or lack thereof is often achieved. Excellent point, James. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Has the war on whistleblowers actually reached our food production? Has it gone that far? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, sitting in for Tom today in an everly shaking building.
Yeah, it kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know what is going on with construction next door, but the entire building is shaking.
It is.
It's really exciting. It's just the Heritage Foundation. Sure, everything's just
Are there any
fine.
Whistleblowers down there on that site?
Yes,
that's what I want
seriously.
To know.
Are there any whistleblowers at the Heritage Foundation?
Actually, I've talked to a lot of the guys over there.
They're very nice.
They're awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. They work like crazy, too, in all kinds of weather. So.
Do you realize that you just were recorded saying that?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking.
Sure.
All right. Let's check.
The construction crew.
Just to specify.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's check in with Sue in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Sue, thanks for watching DirecTV.
Hi, Danielle. Excellent show today.
Thank you.
I've got some information for you. I work in information security, and it's amazing how many people actually watch us when we're online. There are third-party sites, read information gatherers, depending on what site that we go to. So there is a way to fight back. We actually can download programs, depending on the browser that we're using, and see who's watching us and block them.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, who's watching the watchers, so to speak? What programs should people look into?
Okay. If you use Firefox browser, the program that you want to download is called Lightbeam, L-I-G-H-T-B-E-A-M, and that can be downloaded from Mozilla.org. If you use Chrome browser, you can actually go to chrome.google.com and download a program called Collusion, C-O-L-L-U-S-I-O-N.
Hmm.
And then if you use Internet Explorer, you can go to a site called Ghostery, G-H-O-S-T-E-R-Y.com, and the program can be downloaded there, and you have all kinds of control over who can see you and who can't.
Yep, that is really interesting information, Sue. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome, and
really,
great show today.
Really, really appreciate it.
I was going to say, if you're using Internet Explorer, don't worry. It won't work
long enough.
For that, but yeah. Just don't worry.
But Sue in Green Bay, Wisconsin, excellent information. Lightbeam, Collusion, and what was the last one, Sue?
Ghostery.
All right. Well, I just wrote them down, and we'll check into them after the show. I really appreciate the information.
I'm doing it during the show.
Shana
is
on it.
I'm actually downloading it right now.
Thank you, Sue.
I'll report in who's watching us on the computer.
Let's check in with Anton in Spokane, Washington. Thanks for hanging out with the Tom Hartman program, Anton.
Yes. Hi. Okay, about the whistleblowers you were discussing on the air. Okay, if people could get involved with their local governments, they can stop a lot of those, the gag order where they can't.
The ag-gag orders?
Yeah. And you know, a lot of that take place like within the cities, counties, and states. And that's one way of they can stop that, because a lot of things are implemented way ahead of time to protect the corporate, you know, the people that are doing all that stuff that violate a lot of our, you know, civic laws, you know.
Yeah, and they're also often hidden. They're also often sold as if these laws are going to somehow benefit us. Like these ag gag bills are often called right to farm, as if me knowing information about what is going on at some factory farm is going to take away their right to run a business.
Yes, it's always written in a way that is for the people, but it's never really for the people. It's for the people that it's for the corporate, their interest.
It's for the legal person, not the human being.
They're doing it legally, put it that way.
Anton, it's always an excellent suggestion, I think, to get involved with your local politics. So many people don't realize how much it affects our lives. You know, it's much, I think it has a much bigger impact than a lot of national policy.
It certainly has a more direct impact.
Right.
And as you see a consolidation in media, you don't have as many of these local news, you know, stories, your local radio, local television. There's some, but, you know, as those newsrooms get smaller and smaller, it's a lot easier to cover the national. And people pay attention to the national, and people vote on the national, and people have an opinion on the national. But so many of the laws and decisions that are made on a local level don't get as much coverage and are slipped in and have a much more direct impact on you.
Yeah, and getting involved with your local politics often affects who gets elected on a state level or a national level.
Sure. It's like the B team. You know, or the farm team, you know, everyone, you know, they rise up through that. And all of a sudden, oh, where did this guy come from? Well, he's been in your state legislature for the last 20 years. Oh, really?
Yeah. Definitely Always good advice. Let's check in with Sophia watching on the Dish Network in Maysville, Kentucky. Sophia, thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Thanks for talking to me today.
Absolutely.
I was wondering if you guys ever heard of a former MI5 agent turned whistleblower named Annie Machan.
It doesn't ring a bell off the top of my head. Tell us about Annie.
Okay, well, anyway, I heard her interviewed by Abby Martin once, and I'm paraphrasing her here, but mm-hmm. the gist of the information was that British and obviously American intelligence as well, or should I say the corporations that control them, maybe, can routinely redirect Internet traffic in order to manipulate poll results or even elections.
Wow.
And that information can be generated or deleted in order to serve, you know, these interests with regard to anyone from the highest office to even the common citizen. And this may be the answer as to why, you know, progressives are always asking, why don't Democrats do more to, you know, work, fight for the people or message well during campaigns or call out conservatives, you know, and fight harder. Yeah, I mean, I think imagine having your education and life experience deleted and while at the same time seeing a faked video of yourself in bed with a 12-year-old all over Fox so-called news. I mean, that could go a long way to keeping people from fighting. I mean, I don't know, you know, if I have her information completely right. You could probably Google it. This was breaking the set, I think it was about 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I recall from having heard her speak to Abby.
Well, it certainly sounds like an interesting story to check out. And I have to say, I don't think it would even take something, such an extreme example, while it may be correct, to manipulate politicians, manipulate public opinion. You know, Frank Luntz has made a career out of it just by using specific phraseology.
That's very true.
You know?
Yeah, it actually reminds me of the movie The Net. Did you ever see the movie The Net with Sandra Bullock?
Yes.
Yeah, where she has some kind of backdoor computer thing, so they essentially erased her entire identity and gave her a completely different criminal identity. It just reminded me.
Oh, yeah, wasn't that Sandra Bullock?
It was. It was indeed. It was a 95 movie or something like that. So
that's
right. We all thought it was fiction back then.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Well, just think about, you know, the people who used to say long ago, decades ago, that the government was spying on us were looked at as...
Tinfoil hat.
Yeah, tinfoil hat, mentally unwell. And now we see, oh, well, they may have been onto something.
Oh, yeah.
They may have kind of known what they were talking about, or at least had a suspicion based on more than mental illness. So, Sophia, it sounds really interesting. I will check it out, and I appreciate you bringing it up. Let's check in with Mary Jo in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening on 950 AM KTNF. Thanks for calling, Mary Jo.
Yes, hi, Danielle. Yes, I'm calling to try to get the Minnesotans active on the issue of restoring the right to vote for felons. So tomorrow, tomorrow will be too late. If you could call Representative Cornish, who's actually a Republican who authored this bill, and he's actually the chair of the Crime Prevention Committee. And apparently research shows that when felons get their right to vote restored after their prison terms, that it actually helps the rate of crime to go down and for recidivism to go down. So if people could call 651-296-4240 and ask Representative Cornish to get the rest of his Republicans on board with him, and maybe call Representative Thiessen, who's a Democratic minority leader in the House, to get the Democrats behind this. So they do have bipartisan support. We just need to make sure it passes the committee tomorrow.
Yeah, Mary Jo, I think that's an excellent point, and I certainly agree with the restoring the right to vote. Can you post that over at the Tom Hartman Facebook page or on Twitter so that people can go and find it and give them a call?
I'm not on Facebook or Twitter, but maybe I can get somebody else to do
that. Yeah, or if somebody's listening, they can post it. What was that phone number one more time?
651-296-4240. That's for Representative Cornish.
Okay. Well, I
need both Republicans and Democrats to please, please call. I think this is very important.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think it's very important. And Mary Jo, thank you for getting involved and helping protect and restore people's right to vote there in Minnesota. It makes me think of something that the president is being urged to do, and that's to help ex-prisoners find jobs by getting rid of the box, the checkbox, saying that you were a felon or you were convicted of a crime on an employment application, could be a controversial topic. What do you think? Should people have to disclose that they were convicted of a crime when applying for a job?
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Mary Jo explained, it helps recidivism to get the right to vote back. What about the right to get a job? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program on Free Speech TV. Let's check in with Chris, watching on DirecTV in Humphrey, Arkansas. Thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program, Chris.
You're quite welcome. Everything you have said today directly affects me negatively. Every conservative law that's been passed in the last 4 years, including the sequester, which is 4 years old this month.
Wow, that
it's
is
out
amazing.
Of diapers. That is the day of my patent, okay? That sequester came down the day after I called Rick Crawford, Arkansas District 1.
Okay.
I don't know what you want to make out of that, but, you know, I'm very upset about that, and I think some guys named Charles and David might have something to do with that. Furthermore, Buckminster Fuller, you know, the Fullerene guy and the geodesic dome guy, the Dimexion guy.
No idea who you're talking about.
Oh, he's a famous inventor from the 60s.
Okay.
Real smart guy.
And how does that relate to corporate malfeasance and whistleblowers and the sequesters? There's a lot of connections here that I'm missing.
For every one industrial designer, me, my college days, for every one industrial designer, 1,000 people can be employed. Okay, I'm trying to bring jobs in this country. I'm trying to build an invention. I can't get on Kickstarter or Indiegogo because of this internet neutrality problem.
I don't understand how that affects you from getting on net neutrality or getting on a fundraising site.
Somebody's been hacking my attempt to get on this website. And I can't get any, the corporate malfeasance bunch are stopping the FBI from investigating.
It sounds like you have way more going on there than we could possibly address in one phone call. But perhaps you will get that taken care of. And I certainly wish you the best of luck. Do we have time for another call?
You bet.
Let's check in with Bill in Santa Monica, California. Bill, you had some thoughts on the California drought.
Yeah, actually, I'm in Santa Maria.
Oh, excuse me. I just misspoke.
It's a much, much less sexy place, I'll tell you that. But we're kind of farmland, so it is up close and personal with the drought. And there's been a lot of denial out here. Our water laws are ridiculous. They're antiquated, and some people can use all they want. They can pump it out of the ground as much as they want. A few have some regulation. But the governor's just not stepping up. We need a leader. Like this is like a World War II problem because we're going to run out of water.
Yep.
We got 38 million people. We got a $2 trillion economy, and we've been asleep at the wheel, just saying, this is a drought and they're cyclical and it's going to end. It's going to end. It's going to end. It's climate change. It's going to end when the CO2 comes out of the air.
It is a massive problem, Bill. I certainly hope it wakes people up. And it may be too late to affect the drought in California, at least in any time in the very near future. But at least it might prevent the next massive drought or the next massive storm or the next flood or hurricane or whatever. Thanks for the call. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom today. And we are hearing from the one, the only, Ellen Ratner of Talk Radio News Service, free-don.org, goatsfortheoldgoats.com, and, of course, talkradionews.com. Ellen, thanks for calling in. What's in the news today?
Well, thank you so much. Actually, the House passed an agreement by Speaker Boehner and Leader Pelosi on a Medicare bill. It's basically changes what's called the sustainable growth rate. This has always been this doctor fix, so that doctors were not penalized for taking care of Medicare patients. It passed 392-37, and actually it had 33 Republicans, only 4 Democrats voted against the bill. It is expected to go to the Senate, but now the question is what will happen to the Senate. There is still that abortion issue in it, but also the CHIP program is in it. Some people are saying they didn't authorize the CHIP program, that's the Children's Insurance Program, as long as it should be, but in any case, it is something that they've been able to agree on for the first time in a very long period of time.
Yes, it's stunning that they were able to agree. What does the bill do? That it helps doctors, hurts doctors?
Well, it does help doctors. Now, some doctors, there is actually somebody on the internet that's saying that it hurts it, but most doctors feeling like it helps it. The question is how much it costs. It's scored, as what they call it. It's everywhere from $153 billion to about almost $200 billion, $214 billion over 10 years. Now, some of this money is reached by what's called offsets, income, things that they're taking from other places, or additional taxes, revenue. Of course, Republicans don't like taxes, but it is taxes, some revenue to pay for it. So that's going on. Meanwhile, at the same time, there's what's called a Voterama, and this is, again, about the budget. Obviously, Obamacare is going in, and it's expected that votes are going to go till late, possibly today, on amendments that would be on this budget. And this is on the Senate side today, so that is what's going on with that front. Now, some other issues that are pretty interesting. One is that there has been a talk now about this crazy bill in California. It's not going to get anywhere. But a lawyer named Matt McLaughlin, he is a lawyer in, I think he's in Manhattan Beach, and he is proposing a bill that would execute California residents on the basis of their sexuality. Anyone who touches another person of the same gender for sexual gratification can be put to death by bullets to the head and any other convenient method.
Obviously, something like that legislatively would never go anywhere. Anybody with an IQ of 100 would understand that. Is this just grasping for ultra-conservative voters? I mean, what could possibly be achieved by introducing that?
Well, he's obviously quite out of his mind, but if he could get 865,880 signatures, then he could get this on the ballot. Now, then the Secretary of State could actually reframe it by calling it something else. And she said if the court does not grant relief, in other words, say that this is unconstitutional and therefore it can't go on the ballot, my office will be forced to issue a title and summary for a proposal that seeks to legalize discrimination and vigilantism. So it probably will go absolutely nowhere, and of course the Supreme Court would declare it unconstitutional in a minute. I mean, how do you say yes to gay marriage in a state and then say you're going to kill anybody who participates in any sexual anything, right?
It is disturbing that such a bill would even be introduced. It is really disturbing.
I mean, what has America come to on this one, right?
Right.
Also, the Pope is going to be visiting the United States. He is going to be coming to Congress on September 24th. He was going to be addressing a joint session of Congress, the UN General Assembly on September 25th. And he is going to actually be meeting at the White House with the president on September 23rd. Now, also, the fast track authority that the White House wants for this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is essentially a trade deal, there have been activists that are now saying they're going to run somebody against Ron Wyden in Oregon. Because they say that they think that he has betrayed his base. And MoveOn.org, released in Oregon, said that 79% of its members would back a primary challenge to Wyden. This is not good for Wyden if he continues on with the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, we're actually going to be speaking with someone from Public Citizen next about that, not specifically Wyden, but about the push against Fast Track and TPP. It's amazing to me that that any legislator, especially a Democrat, would support Fast Track and the TPP.
Well, but he's working on this with the White House.
I know.
You can imagine.
I know. It makes me scratch my head.
It makes me scratch it, too. Okay. So, as you know, as I just said, the Pope will be coming. A couple other interesting things. Iraq Special Forces are moving on to Crit, which is, of course, where Saddam Hussein is from, in Iraq. There are two groups of Iraqis that say they won't deal with this. They won't participate. The United States didn't want them to participate. The United States is part of the coalition forces that are backing up the Iraqi forces to overtake Tikrit from ISIS, ISIL.
Yeah, and the president walking back, withdrawing troops in Afghanistan. So,
well, that happened yesterday. That's
right.
Absolutely right. So it looks like we're still in there.
The quagmire continues.
Only almost 9,500 troops, if you can believe it.
When will we see the end of this endless war? It's
beats me. Now, very interesting. Cuba is pushing for human rights talks with the United States. It's interesting because, of course, they've been painted by particularly many people on the right as anti-human rights. They say that Human Rights Watch has said, although they're not a conservative group, that there are beatings, public acts of shaming, termination of employment. Well, one of the public acts of shaming that Cuba actually participates in, I don't disagree with. And they put on television drunk drivers who have committed a drunk driving offense. I'm not against that. I hate to say it.
It's certainly one way of handling it. It's probably less extreme than how we handle it here.
That's what I think, but hey, I'm just an opinionated person.
Well, we love your opinions. Thank you so much, Ellen. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News, and we'll be back with Public Citizen next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano in for Tom today. And if you were just listening to Ellen Ratner talk about a big campaign mounting against Fast Track and the TPP and possibly even Ron Wyden, Melinda St. Louis, Director of International Campaigns, Public Citizens, Global Trade Watch, citizen.org/trade is the website. Melinda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about these letters, 600 groups turning up the heat on Congress and the president against TPP.
Yes, these letters
that were sent earlier this week are a very strong message to Congress and to the president that basically the entire Democratic base, from labor to environmental organizations to family farm groups to LGBT groups to faith groups, consumer organizations, seniors, internet freedom groups, are united in opposing a fast track for the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the TPP, a failed trade policy that many of these groups have been working tirelessly to try to improve over the last 5 years of negotiations, but at this point have been forced to say that an old process that would just fast track this Trans-Pacific Partnership through the U.S. Congress is absolutely not acceptable.
It absolutely is not. Even before the latest information came out about it, as you said, many of these groups, including Public Citizen, have been working hard to stop Fast Track, to get some exposure and transparency in the negotiation process, if not stop TPP entirely. But then there was also this latest leak that you guys have up at citizen.org about essentially an extraordinary level of corporate power that I'd say puts corporations on par with governments. How do we even wrap our brains about this kind of information being exposed only because of WikiLeaks and not being transparent in our federal government?
Yes, it's quite remarkable. As you said, late last night, WikiLeaks posted a leaked text. It's a chapter of the TPP. Again, almost we know very little about what's actually in the TPP because it has been negotiated for more than 5 years in secrecy. But WikiLeaks apparently obtained this text, and we had seen a earlier version of the text way back 3 years ago that it had leaked. And unfortunately, what we see is confirmation of some of our worst fears that the TPP would expand the very controversial process called Investor State Dispute Settlement, ISDS. It sounds obscure, but what it is it's basically elevates corporations, foreign corporations, to be able to sue our government outside of our court system. They can bypass our courts and they go to these foreign tribunals that are made up of three private lawyers who decide if our policies, such as an environmental protection policy or a public health protection policy, has violated their extreme investor rights and can force us as taxpayers to pay millions or even billions of dollars of compensation to these corporations. Again, this happens completely outside of our courts, and only foreign corporations have access to this. Domestic companies do not, citizens do not, and governments cannot sue corporations. It's a one-way street for foreign corporations to be able to attack our laws and our policies.
Yeah, there's some really scary stuff. I was just shaking my head reading the information from Public Citizen and from WikiLeaks that you guys posted. We were just talking with somebody from Talk Radio News Service, so you may or may not be familiar with this. I don't know how Public Citizen is involved in the fight, but she was saying how groups like MoveOn are essentially challenging Ron Wyden specifically, and I know you guys sent a letter to him about his views, his stance on the TPP. Is Public Citizen involved in that in any way?
Well, Public Citizen is part of the Citizens Trade Campaign, which is a large coalition of labor and family farm and consumer organizations. And there is a coalition in Oregon that has been targeting Senator Wyden because he's the ranking member of the committee in the Senate and plays a very key role in making sure that he does not accept a fast-track deal to be able to railroad the TPP through Congress. And so there's been a broad effort, and again, this goes way beyond those of us who have been working on trade for a long time, but people who are very concerned, the more they see of what, like the WikiLeaks leak from last night and others that we've seen before, that the dangers of this agreement and are saying to Ron Wyden that he needs to stay firm and not agree to a fast track that would allow this to undermine the middle class jobs in the U.S.
Yeah, middle class jobs, our environmental regulation, our trade regulation, intellectual property regulation. This is a massive deal that just has so many components. And as you guys exposed and shared with the WikiLeaks information, really puts manufacturing firms, workers, environmental groups on at war with international corporations. I mean, how is it that we fight this after we support public citizen, after we, you know, sign letters and petitions and call our legislatures? What else can we do?
Well, what we need to do is we need to stop fast track. We need to make sure that the U.S. Congress does not grant fast track authority for the TPP. That is what is going to stop this. And the good news is that momentum is building. And everyone needs to call their representative. They need to continue to do that. They are under tremendous pressure from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, from big moneyed interests that are throwing millions of dollars at this to try to try to buy off members of Congress on this. And so they need to be hearing from constituents consistently to say, do not support fast track for this. If we can defeat fast track as we have in the past, we can stop this. There's stopfasttrack.com is one way for people to engage. We also have a new website called isdscorporateattacks.org, which goes into detail of in a very concrete terms what the threats are of this horrendous investment chapter that was just leaked by WikiLeaks. And it's a way for people to get educated and to get active on that issue as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, there is no question. A foreign corporation being able to challenge our government, essentially belittle our manufacturers, our companies, our workers here, just doesn't seem like what this country would want, what the people would want. And I don't understand why our lawmakers are fighting to support it. I just don't get it.
Well, and it's shocking because it was really antithetical to the whole push from the Obama administration to supposedly support middle class jobs and to support the middle class in this country. Actually, this chapter, what you see in print when you look at what came out in WikiLeaks is that it actually incentivizes offshoring because it provides companies who want to move their factories to lower wage, lower condition places, an extra safety net that they can then, you know, that they don't actually have to undertake any risk to do that because they could get millions or billions of dollars of compensation if something undermines their what they've done, their investments there.
Right.
So it really does encourage more offshoring. It encourages a downward pressure on U.S. wages because the workers who are now competing for fewer jobs are now, you know, everybody's competing in that for lower jobs and what we've lower wage jobs, and we've seen that this has contributed to income inequality in the United States.
Absolutely. This is a bad deal. We need to stop fast track. Check out publiccitizen.org to see how you can help. Melinda, one second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Melinda St. Louis, Director of International Campaigns, Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Thank you, Melinda.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Lots of callers want to weigh in on lots of important topics. Let's check in with Jim in, I am not even going to try and pronounce your city, Jim. Jim in Illinois watching on Free Speech TV. Chillicothe, maybe?
Chillicothe.
Ah, okay. I got half of it right.
Okay. I wanted to weigh in on that one caller in on education.
Uh-huh.
I went to school, the community college, on the GI Bill, and it cost $8 a semester hour.
Wow.
Now it's upwards to $150 a semester hour.
Yeah, and that's probably just at the community college. It's probably much, much higher at, private universities or big state schools.
And that was back in 76.
Yeah. It's amazing how it's gone up. Jim, don't you think that the GI Bill was a great plan and it should be expanded to people who are willing to commit to other public services?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, the GI Bill really helped because that put my foot in the door for getting many jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim, excellent points. Thank you.
The GI Bill is one of those remarkable pieces of legislation that added so much to income and wealth equality.
Mm-hmm.
And it expanding it would help so much.
Yeah. And so much. You know what? I have no problem with thanking the men and women who commit their lives to this country. And I don't think that it should only have to be committing your lives to the military to get that benefit.
But you remember even John McCain, this is in the middle of the Iraq War, famously saying we didn't want to make it too attractive for soldiers to leave the service.
Right.
You do remember this.
Hey, how many times have members of both parties stood against veterans benefits? And I'm sorry, right. I don't think you should be able to be allowed to send people to war if you're not willing to vote and support their benefits.
Agreed.
When they get home. But
agreed.
Jim, thank you very much for your service and for your great comments there on education. Let's check in with John in Gresham, Oregon, watching on the Dish Network. Thanks for hanging out with us, John.
I just wanted to comment on your right to be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing some research on that, and I've found it to be basically a vehicle for the rich to have themselves forgotten in news articles.
Hmm. Over in the EU.
Yes.
Now, I have not, obviously had experience with this. This isn't something we have access to in our country. So for me, it's kind of just this general concept.
Right.
I don't know that I believe in how it would work, period. But from what you read, it's a privilege of the wealthy.
Right. And so what it is basically is the grounds in which it can be exercised should be narrowed. The criteria provided by the CJEU, or the Criminal Justice of the European, information about the person that is, quote-unquote, inadequate, irrelevant, or excessive may be the link.
Doesn't that describe most people's Facebook page?
But it's not Facebook.
I know. I'm being silly, but I think that's pretty much what most people post online these days.
Right. So basically, the needs for specific scenarios.
Interesting.
They need to basically have specific scenarios where they can silence or prejudice people's speech.
Well, it doesn't surprise me that a law in any country benefits the wealthy more than the rest of us.
But that's the other
rigged.
Side of the argument.
Yeah.
Which we're encouraging here. So you really want to, flush this out.
Right. And maybe somebody else knows otherwise. Thanks, John. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm here with Shano. I'm Danielle. We're sitting in for Tom today, taking your calls on lots of great topics, including privacy. Something, by the way, that is going to be majorly challenged if the TPP goes through. I don't know if you've ever gone over to WikiLeaks, gone over to Public Citizen, and checked out their rules on intellectual property and internet rights.
Oh, do tell.
It's pretty scary stuff. Essentially, we have such a problem with foreign companies mm-hmm. taking our trademarks, rebuilding it. That would be
trade secrets.
Trade secrets, irrelevant.
Really?
Yes.
Or you'd have to go to the international tribunal instead
right,
of going to a federal court.
Right, but domestic companies
here.
Don't have the same rights as foreign companies. So you can't go to challenge this international court if you're a U.S. producer and China steals your patent. I mean, there's stuff in there that you just scratch your head how anybody, our trade negotiators, would even agree to it.
Makes no sense.
It makes none. I want to quickly, I promised Chuckles in the chat room that I would mention the 47 traders petition.
Oh.
It's up over 300,000 signatures.
Now, what are the rules in terms of how long the White House has to respond on these?
I don't know.
It'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to their response.
Yeah, whitehouse.gov. So Chuckles, as promised, maybe we can get it up over 400,000.
And it only requires, what, 200,000 for them to?
I thought it was only 100,000. Because it used to be 25,000, and they were reaching that too quickly, and the White House was having to comment on many somewhat ridiculous petitions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
now 100,000. It's 100,000.
Wow.
Yes.
And still silence. Crickets.
Still silence. Hmm. And Dear Prue in the chat room wanted to mention Andy Caffrey, C-A-F-F. E-R-Y, I believe, dear Prue, hopefully I got that right, another Democratic candidate for president that's already running. Check it out, Andy Caffrey, 2016.
I will.
All right. So I fulfilled my promises.
Well done.
Let's check in with Craig, listening on Sirius in Crestview, Florida. Craig, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you for letting me talk here. I wanted to talk a little bit about the difference between a perceived problem of lack of privacy versus a real-world use of lack of privacy. I work 911, and not everybody's cell phone will actually ping to where they're at. And we have found, it is kind of a lack of privacy if it does, but we've found homeless people who have been hurt in the woods, lost people in the woods with cell phone data. Also, you get Alzheimer's patients who maybe don't know much more than their name. They don't know where they're at. Their cell phone doesn't ping to their house because it's an older cell phone. And, I literally can access 3 or 4 government databases within seconds. And if they've never bumped into the police or some of these other things, you can't find them. But you can find them a lot of times through reverse lookup. And that saves lives. I've had a fire where somebody driving by called the garage on fire, and finally a public database found the house number, called the house number, woke up the family, and got them out of the house before the fire got to them.
Wow. No,
real life
doesn't sometimes today. People's lives are saved by giving up their privacy, if you want to say.
Well, I think that's certainly a unique situation, but I don't disagree with you.
There are benefits for our information being out there.
Right.
Think about,
even convenience is still a benefit.
Well, I even talked about the Amy's recall.
Right.
That was one of those situations in which a store having our information was a good thing. It could have prevented us from getting ill. I mean, not all situations. If all situations in terms of relinquishing our privacy were negative, we simply wouldn't do it. We just wouldn't.
Right.
The question is when do we get to that point? What I'm talking about, in this situation with 911, those are governmental computers, and there's a limit to what I want
the
government to
know. And I imagine
that
the operators have background checks, and, there are people who we don't have a problem with.
And safeguards and things like that. And there's a limit to what I want the government knowing. We're talking a lot about corporate, having the corporations having so much of our information and using it and selling it and buying it and swapping it and marketing to us is one thing, but then knowing so much, it creeps me out, I got to tell you.
That's
probably what it is.
It does. I think I just don't see how we solve the problem. I just don't understand it. I'm sure there are minds far greater than my own working on that problem. And Craig, thank you for the call. There was a lot of noise in your phone there, so I'm going to jump to the next.
They sound like windshield wipers.
They sounded like windshield wipers, but there was a pigeon joke to be made in there. Not anything personal, Craig. It did sound like pigeons. Yes. Let's check in with Mark, listening at TomHartman.com in San Francisco, California. Thanks for listening, Mark.
Yeah, no problem. I wanted to talk about income inequality and the main causes of it, which is the demise of the unions, mm-hmm. bad trade policies, and an unfair tax code. Those are the three main, culprits to income inequality. And until they're called out and addressed, we're going to keep having this problem.
Yeah, I think that there are people calling them out and addressing. I wholeheartedly agree with
you. Amen. And I think during this week, we've pointed out a lot of the ways that they're trying to make it even worse. We've talked about the GOP tax plan. We've talked about what's going on in Wisconsin with unions. And now we're talking about TPP. I mean, we're getting it on three fronts. And you're absolutely right. Those are the three things. I would add to it education, mm-hmm. GI Bill, things like that, that the prior caller talked about. Those are the areas where you can get more of it. I'm not saying equal society, but an equitable society. Standing up to the corporate power.
Yeah.
The thing is, the Republicans keep pushing, right to work mm-hmm. and a bad tax policy. They continue, and nobody's really calling them out, saying that this is what's caused the problem, and they're making it worse. I don't hear Democrats coming out and saying these are the policies that destroyed the middle class, and they're pushing it even further.
Yeah, I think you do. I think there are Democrats out there saying it. I know for a fact that Bernie Sanders is one of them. Elizabeth Warren is another. Alan Grayson, Sherrod Brown.
I just did.
there are out there, but they don't get the same size microphone as the crew that shows up on Meet the Republicans every Sunday, as Tom calls it, and you know the Republicans that show up every week. Week in and week out. Like, think how many times we've seen John McCain on Meet the Press when that could have been Bernie Sanders. It could have been Elizabeth Warren. People willing to make those statements. So hopefully we'll hear more of it. But right on, Mark. You make excellent points. Thanks for calling.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Danielle and Shano here in for Tom. What's on your mind? Give us a call. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom. And one more quick reminder, if you're in L.A. this weekend, March 28th through the 29th, join Tom Hartman at Sister Giant 3, presented by Marianne Williamson. Tom will be speaking on Saturday with former Congressman Dennis Kucinich and Senator Bernie Sanders. For tickets and information, you can go to Sister Giant 3 or just click the link over at TomHartman.com. Back to calls, Shano?
Sounds good.
All right. Lots of great people on the board. Merlene in Morriston, Florida, watching on the Dish Network. Thanks for calling, Merlene.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling regarding California's problem, water problem.
Okay.
I think, I don't know how much they could generate, but we could anchor a whole string of our carriers along your coast because these carriers have desaltation systems, and we could run probably hoses from them onto the land and fill up some kind of storage or something for them.
Yeah, it's certainly an idea, and people need to be putting forward more and more of those in order to solve the problems. I am by far not an expert on military or aircraft carriers, but it couldn't hurt, right? If they're just sitting in a dock somewhere else.
They had a carrier over... when Japan had the radiation, you know, in the water,
mm-hmm.
they had a carrier off of there. I don't know if they were supplying water to them or what they were doing, but I do know that they do have a fairly large desaltation system.
Interesting.
And
I'd be interested to know if there's any surplus, that, you know, when you, because there's a certain amount of crew that has to be aboard.
Oh, yes.
That's what I was wondering.
Sure that, there, you know, you'd have to... water the crew.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to know how much of a surplus, and you put enough of them out there.
Absolutely. You know what? It's an idea. And the more ideas we get out there, the closer we're going to be to finding a solution. Thank you, Merlene, for that wonderful point there in Morriston, Florida. Let's check in with John on X-Ray FM in Portland, Oregon. Thanks for calling, John.
Thank you, folks, for being there. Much love. And, my comments are, it seems like we always forget about the big elephant in the room, all of us as human beings reproducing. And my comments are, if people need to feel more active, I've done this before, go door to door, especially in poor neighborhoods, to do a group and carry voter registrations and Planned Parenthood info, because I'm one of six kids. And my mother needed six kids like she needed a hole in the head. And talk about Planned Parenthood and then the need to register to vote and use their kids as an example why they need to vote for their kids for their future.
John, I think they're all brilliant ideas and we share something in common. I am the youngest of six kids and my dad was the youngest of seven. And I think both of those families as well. I love all my siblings. I love all my aunts and uncles. But that puts quite a strain on a family financially, physically, emotionally, mentally. It's a lot to take care of that many children. It's a lot to take care of one. Excellent point there in Portland, Oregon. Let's check in with Dante in Los Angeles, California, watching on the Dish Network. Thanks for watching the Tom Hartman program, Dante.
Hey, Daniel, how you doing?
We are doing very well. Happy to be here hanging out with all of you guys. Thank you.
Yeah. Let me run it down to you guys, and this is to all of America. And I'm digging on what Marlene was talking about. She's absolutely correct, because I'm from California, and I'm concerned about it. Just told my daughter to turn the water off the other day. Don't run it. But let me say this to you. As far as the TTP is concerned, you know, the president, I'm a little disappointed in him in that, but I still love him, Michelle, and the girls. We all do down here in Cali. But let me say this, Danielle. When you have a country that's unrepentant for the ownership of human beings, then you got to expect that they're going to go overseas, do the things that they do to the Iraqis, which is wrong. And then they want to sit back and have us all thinking that we hate the police. You know, all the police aren't bad. And that's nonsense. They want to swear us with media. Then you have a situation where they want to have whites against blacks. That's nonsense, man. Now, what it is, it takes a white fist to knock the Klan hood off. And it takes us and our communities to deal with the gang problems, the pedophile that hunt our children, the rapists that hunt our women. So until we can deal with all of that, then, yeah, you got wars going on. The money is controlling everything because why? Everybody's up for sale. And until we're not up for sale and we start fearing what the holy Lord itself and say, hey, look, we're not going to tolerate you hunting our women. We're not going to tolerate you hunting our kids. And that doesn't mean we become anti-Semitic about things that's going on. So I say to Merlin, it has to be her fist that knocks off the Klan hood. It has to be my fist that knocks off the criminal hood in our communities. And then we can start. And we have to hold the politicians accountable. We must march down. The best thing going is the Wall Street protesters.
Yeah.
That's where the money is.
I think Occupy Wall Street was an incredible movement. I think there's extremism in all races, not racism, but extremism. And I think that there are criminal elements in all races. You know, I understand what you're getting at, I think. I think it takes us coming together as a community and not being afraid to stand up to people we disagree with.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sick and tired of seeing the kids hunted. I'm sick and tired of seeing the women hunted. You should be able to go out, Danielle, at 1 a.m. when you get off of work without being aggressed by somebody. So the question is, any of the callers that's listening to feel the way I feel in California, and you know what's going on in South Central. I've been here. I'm 46. I've lived through it. A lot of my friends didn't live through it. And then you have the people going in. And what we did in Arizona, locking those kids in those kennels, man, that's a disgrace. That's a disgrace.
Well, the kids came off the border from Nicaragua.
Oh, okay. Yes, absolutely. Dante, all excellent points. If we just start holding people accountable and holding, it starts with ourselves, our communities, our local politicians. Yes, all the way up to the president with TPP and Fast Track and our lawmakers. How do we change things? And thank you for the call, Dante, and thank you for listening to the Tom Hartman program. How do we change things if we're not willing to make the hard calls?
Got to be active.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's check in with Paul in South Lyon, Michigan, watching on Free Speech TV. Thanks for calling in, Paul.
Hey, great show, you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to say I'm not saying I'm for the TPP because I don't know everything that's in it. Because it's still being negotiated in secret, like all things are negotiated. But I just want to say that I think Ron Wyden and the president know more about the TPP than Public Citizen does. And let's not forget that Public Citizen was created by Ralph Nader. And what was Nader's biggest accomplishment? Seatbelts? Airbags? No, it was giving us 8 years of suffering under Bush and the
Republicans. I disagree completely with that last part. But yes, I think you're right, Paul, that we don't know exactly what's in it. But the information we have gotten, you have to admit, Paul, it does concern you, does it not?
Yes.
It does.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But we're also not getting the big picture.
Let's take the next step then. So if we don't know what's in it, should we be encouraging or discouraging our Congress from voting on Fast Track before we do?
On
Fast Track.
I mean, I see the advantage of Fast Track. It's the only way of getting anything passed.
I understand, but shouldn't we know what's in it before voting on Fast Track?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I think that's all Public Citizen's really saying at this point. Let's not do Fast Track because we don't know what's in this darn thing, and what we do know about it, we really don't like. To say we're gonna Fast Track something we've never seen seems ridiculous to me.
Right, but they're also cherry picking information. And here's an example: Peter DeFazio last week came out and said, the Korean free trade agreement led to 400,000 cars being brought into this country and exports of 20,000 cars out of the country.
Right.
And what he left out was those 400,000 cars would have come into this country even without a free trade deal. But the free trade deal got us 20,000 cars being exported.
How would those 400,000 cars come in here? Because I think his – I'm not speaking for – if I were to make that argument, I would say, no, those 400,000 cars would have been built here by union workers and union cars.
Or at least tariffs. At least had some type of tariffs.
Well, absolutely. We need tariffs, right? But at the moment, even before the Korean trade, we had free trade. But thanks to the Republicans in Congress, they won't agree to any tariffs. So the president's looking at, like, well, I'm not going to get rid of free trade, so let's at least try and expand our exports. And that's what he's trying to do. And, you know, people are taking things out of context, but they don't have the whole picture. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I can see that. But I'm not willing to say, hey, let's go forward on what they were calling, they're not calling it fast track, they're calling it trade promotion authority.
Right.
You know, if they're relabeling it and trying to put it in a different pretty box, I'm already skeptical. If all the Republicans are for it, and by the way, I need to point out, and not all Republicans are, I misspoke there, our libertarian friends, and especially our Tea Party friends, are very much against this as well. I see a real coalition of progressives and Tea Partiers being against this because they're concerned about giving up autonomy.
Yeah, but the Tea Partiers are supported by the Koch brothers. If there's a handful of them against it, it's just for show. And if it came down to it, if they really needed to vote for it, they would.
We'll have to see.
I don't know. We will certainly have to see. Paul, thank you very much for calling. And
only
for
about 10 seconds.
For spending time with us today on Free Speech TV. You know,
I can just tell you were going for another call. I was like, no.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I was.
No problem.
The sections I've seen, I wholeheartedly disagree with. Whether they're being cherry-picked, I don't know. But it could be solved very quickly with some transparency and with, at the very least, allowing our lawmakers, our elected representatives, to share with us what they think is important.
The process makes me skeptical.
Right.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
What do you think? Are you scared by the fact that the TPP is being negotiated in secret? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program on Free Speech TV, continuing with your calls. Paul, by the way, is an economist. So I will say, you know, he may know some things much, much better than I do. I just disagree with the TPP, but let's get
Mike. I disagree with fast-tracking the TPP without knowing what's in it.
Fair enough. We have a range of opinions.
It's like saying, Danielle, I got a deal for you. Yeah? Is that good? No, you have to answer before I tell you what the deal is. But once you say yes, the deal is done.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, I just to give him credit that he is not.
Essentially, I think, not to speak for Paul, but not all trade agreements are bad. But the ones I've seen so far are.
I am not a big supporter of free trade. I'm all for fair trade.
Sure.
All for it. Let's go with Michael, watching on the Dish Network in Smithfield, North Carolina. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV, Michael.
Hey, Daniel. How you doing? Daniel, the North Carolina Republican legislator and Republican Governor Pat McCrory almost 2 years ago signed a very strict voter ID law.
Strictest in the country.
Strict. Yeah. And that, and I think it was last week, state Senator Dan Blue out of Durham, which is a Democrat, filed a bill that would, you know, you can students in colleges can use student IDs. Well, the new House Speaker, Tim Moore, which is a Republican, of course, said it is not going to get out of the Rules Committee. And, you know, and it's really sad, too. And, that bill's not going to be taken up for a single vote.
Yeah, and in one of the most politically active capitals, active states in the country, I mean, Moral Mondays starting in North Carolina, 80,000 people, I think, were out in the streets for one event. You just don't see mobilization like that in other places. There's so much going on in that state legislature. It's sad that we've come to this in our country, where legislative action and policies is so against public opinion that they have to keep people from voting in order to get it passed.
Right, and you can only use, starting January 1st of next year, 2016, you have to show a photo ID, and it has to be a state, or it has to be a state DMV or a state DMV driver's license. And
yep.
I mean, personally, they're trying to keep people away from the polls, like me, that does not have a driver's license. Well, I think personally, that's illegal.
It should be illegal, and under the original Voting Rights Act, it would at least be challenged. Attorney General Eric Holder is working on challenging some of the laws in North Carolina, and there are great organizations working on challenging those laws. Hopefully, they are able to have some success before the 2016 elections, but in the event that they don't, I challenge people in all of these states to check on your neighbors. Not only do they have the right ID, do they have the right forms? Are they registered to vote? Can you give them a ride and sit with them at the DMV? Can you give them the $3 or the $5 that it takes to get an ID? You don't need to have an effect on 10,000 people to make a big difference. If we all helped one or two people, that would go a long way. Michael, thanks for watching there on Dish Network. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom today. And I will mention our Twitter one more time, only because somebody requested it on Facebook. Shane is at Producer Shano. I am at Danielle on Radio on Twitter. So give us a shout out over there and let us know what you think. Let us know what you think about the issues, what news you're following, what you'd like to hear about. We welcome your opinions, contributions, whatever the case may be. Let's check in with Matthew in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, watching on DirecTV. Thank you for watching the Tom Hartman Program, Matthew.
Hi, Danielle. I was listening, and I heard this woman talking about bringing in the ships to desalinate water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a few years back, I don't remember exactly how many, but I worked at a plant where we manufactured semi-trailer size desalinization units, and we did thousands of them before the place moved to Kentucky, where they continued making them. This was around probably the Gulf War era when mm-hmm. they changed all the military vehicles to that tan color. But these units not only filtered salt water into potable drinking water, it also had the ability to filter biological and nuclear waste.
Wow.
Plus, it had, I don't know if you know what reverse osmosis is, but it had a section of this trailer where these machines would actually pump, like an air compressor, the air, and the water molecules would compress and collect to the wall, and you could get water from thin air.
Wow.
And there are thousands of them out there. I don't know where they went, but when we built these things, they were built before the military.
Well, presumably they're out there somewhere, or some other company is manufacturing them. What type of volume, though, would one of these trucks put out?
They had two bladders that would sit alongside the truck, and I believe they were like 500 to maybe 550 gallons each, and those things could be filled up probably 2-3 times a day.
Wow. I mean, they say, you know, I'm from Florida, so we always have to prepare for hurricanes. And they always say that to prepare for 1 gallon per person per day. So theoretically, you're saying that one of these trucks could support the water needs of up to 1,000 to 1,500 people a day.
Exactly. And the thing that always bothered me, every time there was like Katrina or the Florida hurricanes and stuff like that, when they would always talk about the water shortage and the problem with getting water to these people. And I kept thinking to myself, why did we build these things? Where are they?
Yeah. And if they could do them then, even if those trucks are gone, then theoretically they could do it again. And it would certainly take less time than building a giant desalinization plant off the coast of California.
And it sounds like jobs.
Right.
Yeah, and jobs.
And the engineers at this place were working at the time on a device that, well, I told you that they could remove nuclear waste from water.
Yeah, I'm sure some people in Japan would really appreciate that technology about now.
Exactly. It was sort of a distillation thing with some membrane that he was working on, but why aren't these things out there?
Yeah.
Why are they hiding them?
Excellent questions, Matthew. Maybe somebody who's listening can answer. Maybe somebody knows what happened to those trucks. But let's thank you very much for watching there in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Let's check in with Richard in Sarasota, Florida, my home state. How's it going, Richard?
Pretty good, Danielle. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. You're on the air.
Okay. That guy, Paul, he had to be a troll.
He is not.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, I've exchanged emails with Paul personally, and I don't do it very often.
Why would he be saying we jumped to conclusion by not doing PPP?
I don't know.
If you can show me one trade deal that ever netted jobs for us, I would be in favor of TPP.
See, and for me, while the jobs is certainly an important factor, it's also about more than jobs. I mean, if you look at what this could do to environmental regulations, I have a huge leaked chapter sitting right next to me on the ISDS, the Investor State Dispute Settlement, which we already know has allowed foreign firms to collect over $3.6 billion in compensation from U.S. firms or the U.S. government by challenging our regulations or our corporate policies, saying that, you know, they're hurting their overseas business. Why would we want more of that?
I agree.
Yeah. But, hey, I am quite passionate about the issue. Sometimes passion could persuade my judgment, I suppose.
I think it's still based on the facts. But Paul is a very smart guy.
Yeah, he is definitely not a troll, I promise.
1,000% not a troll in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe we'll have a chance to speak with him again later in the week and get more of his opinion. And, Richard, you know, jobs are certainly a big deal. That in and of itself is a very, very important cause. Thank you for watching there in Sarasota, Florida. It's such an important topic, the TPP. Oh, one more call?
Yep.
I thought you were saying one more minute.
Yep, exactly. Both.
Okay, Judy in Ames, Iowa, watching on Free Speech TV.
Real quick.
Real quick, Judy.
Well, I know I'm at the end of the show, so I'll just throw this out there. Maybe you can discuss it tomorrow or later.
Okay.
I'm one of those who thinks that the representatives, John Boehner and Boehner, are guilty of treason with the Iran, you know, sending me a letter to Iran. And I'm really curious as to who or what mechanism is in place to start an investigation and possibly prosecute some of these.
Well, Judy, I completely understand the sentiment. We are completely out of time, but I will get into that tomorrow and give you our thoughts on it. Thank you very much for the call there from Iowa, and thank everybody for hanging out with us today. It's an honor to spend time with all of Tom's great viewers and listeners. You guys are great. Thank you.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.